It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
JJ Cooper, Nick Pecoro today, another of these Baseball America farm system deep dives. And today we're going to take an in-depth look at the Arizona Diamondbacks, a fascinating organization to me, an organization that has a number one prospect who wouldn't be the number one prospect if it just had a little bit more good luck when it comes to health in Jordan Lawler, an organization that was in the World Series very recently, but also is in the AL West, where it feels like every year is going to be an uphill climb when you're in an in a division with the Dodgers. Nick, great to see you. As we do on this, we just dive straight in. If we were talking at this time last year and I told you that Jordan Lawler was the number one prospect on the list that you put out for 2025 for us, that would be a bad sign, would it not, considering where he was coming into 24?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just deja vu, right? I mean, he's in exactly the same spot that he was a year ago, and things didn't go his way last year. He had multiple injuries and just never really got on track. I think he played in 25 games, somewhere right around there. He tried to make up some of those at-bats in winter ball, but, you know, I mean, I think everybody expected him to probably have some hold on some position by now. In the big leagues, but it just hasn't happened yet.
And the thing that stands out with that, this is not the first time that Jordan Lawler has dealt with injuries as a pro. He had a shoulder problem that kind of caught short his debut. But the other part of this is as you said, like at this point, we thought he would have claimed a position. While he's been rehabbing, how much have positions been claimed? Obviously, The Diamondbacks, I would say, go into 2025 with a pretty well-sorted middle infield right now, not including Jordan Lawler.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think last year, starting the year, they had acquired Eugenio Suarez, coming off a okay year with the Mariners. I think probably I would have expected Lawler to come up and force his way into the mix at third base, or, you know, in the event that Perdomo really struggled, you know, push Perdomo aside at shortstop. But I mean, really, I think the reality of the shortstop situation was, ever since the 2023 postseason, seeing what Perdomo meant to the team, just, you know, what he meant defensively, the steadiness that he brings, the ability to get on base from the bottom of the lineup. I think it was pretty obvious that position was Perdomo's going forward. And, you know, there was a perception kind of nationally that eventually Lawler is just going to take over. I don't think it was very clear that was the case in my mind. So, you know, if Suarez had struggled last year, maybe Lawler could have stepped in. Suarez did struggle initially. And in fact, it's sort of interesting because I think they were pretty close to cutting ties with Suarez in June of last year. His struggles were so bad. And then Lawler, who had just come back from a thumb injury, blew out his hamstring. And that changed things. It bought Suarez a little bit more leash. And incredibly, he went on this unbelievable tear, so much so that they picked up a $15 million option for him for this year. And I'm watching him here in spring training, and he's dominating. I mean, every time I look up in a live session, he's crushing a ball. It's unbelievable. He just seems like he's figured something out at the plate. So yes, how that pertains to Jordan Lawler, I don't know. He's a really good athlete. I think he can play pretty much anywhere on the field. again, Suarez is only signed through this year. So, you know, maybe third base is Lawler's path forward. You know, Cattell is a guy who is getting older and has been taking more DH days and is expected to take even more this year. And, you know, maybe he slides over to play first base and opens up second base for Jordan Lawler at some point here. He's also, you know, like I said, a really good athlete and could probably run around in center field or anywhere in the outfield if the need arises. So I don't think that, like, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's limited to just one position and the path forward is, you know, it's this or bust. There's a lot of versatility here and we'll just have to see how it shakes out. I think in a perfect world for the Diamondbacks, Lawler goes to Reno, plays really well every day for 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever it is, you know, just gets his feet under him and forces the issue. And they have to decide at that point what they're going to do with him positionally.
And again, the other thing that's worth noting is this is a player who's going to turn 23 midway through the 2025 season. So we're not talking about a 27-year-old and we're saying, like, time is running out. This is someone who, yeah, like, if you look at the big picture, the long term here, it still makes a whole lot of sense that he fits very much in their plans because, as you said, you've got a couple of different guys who are on the, you know, it's not that, I mean, Marte's not on the tail end of his career at this point, but at the same time, he has fewer years left in his career than he already has in the big leagues, probably. Clearly. Suarez, as you said, is on the other side of 30 and is on the final year of a deal. These situations often work themselves out, but it does stand out. Like, it feels like if things, as you said, like if things had gone differently in even 23, we could be talking about Jordan Lawler, who's now in his second or third year as a shortstop. Perdomo's claimed that, gotten a contract extension. That's kind of seems pretty settled now. It just seems like that, but you hit it. The key thing here is beyond everything else, Jordan Lawler just needs to make up at bats, get in a groove offensively, and have a 3 month, 4 month stretch where you say, like, he's playing 5-6 days a week, right? Like, that's the overriding thing that we haven't been able to see him do a lot of at any point in his pro career is kind of have those stretches of dominance because he's had a whole lot of a litany of different kind of injuries. If it was like his shoulder keeps giving him problems, be one thing. It's been shoulder, it's been hamstring, it's been thumb, it's been everything, yeah, all the above.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, he even had like a little rib issue in the 22 season, I think it was, that knocked him out for a little while. Yeah, the shoulder on like his first day. Well, I don't remember if it was exactly his first day. I confused him and but so many of these guys have blown out shoulders shortly after signing. I'm
Drew Jones is like, which one was first day?
Corbin Carroll, yeah. No, I think it was very early after signing that Lawler had that happen. Yeah, I mean he's had a lot of different things. I do think that staying on the field and proving that he can be durable is a box he needs to check. You know, I don't have too many questions about his ability to play shortstop. I think he can do that at a league average level. People that have seen him, you know, say that it's gotten a lot better over the years. You know, offensively, you know, I guess there's a little swing and miss. You know, we'll see just how much power impact he has. But I mean, it's a good hitter. It's a excellent base runner, a very fast runner. A guy that has the ability, I think, to impact the game in just about every way. I don't know if it's going to be a 30 home run guy or, you know, more of a 15 to 20. I think both avenues are possible or are there. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, he's got to get out there first.
And you said, like, the thing about this is offensively, you mentioned his athleticism, his ability to play a wide array of different positions because of athleticism, skills defensively and all. But the other part of this is the bat should also be good enough to handle a move if it's like, okay, because obviously if you're a shortstop and you're playing really good defense at shortstop, the expectation offensively, even though it keeps increasing and shortstops keep getting better offensively, but it's still lower than if you're saying, okay, this guy's our everyday third baseman or he's our everyday center fielder maybe or whatever. But Lawler should be able to handle that. Like, this is still someone who – It's hard for me to imagine. Okay, for one, I'll say if you and I are recording this a year from now and we're still talking about Jordan Lawler as the number one prospect in the Diamondback system, at that point, really is that would be very discouraging because that would mean that this year is another lost year to injury. It's pretty much the only way I can imagine him not reaching the big leagues enough to graduate. But the second part of this is that if we're talking about him a year from now, it's hard for me to imagine him not having being going into 26 with the Diamondbacks positioned to be like a regular somewhere. We just don't know where that's going to be yet, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think if he has another year where he can't stay healthy and get on the field, that's probably going to make it harder for us to make him the number one prospect going forward, given so many more years an additional year of health problems. And if he's still prospect eligible, then he probably didn't have a very good year in Reno. So yeah, I mean, there's no good outcome really if we're talking about him again a year from now.
But the best outcome, I would say, the best, probably the success story in the Diamondbacks organization is the prospect who ranks number two for 2024, is the prospect who ranks number two on our top 30, which is Demetrio Crisantes, who, speaking of injuries, this is kind of a normal theme, unfortunately, with top D-backs prospects. But in Crisantes' case, he kind of got off to a slow start in his pro career, in part because, again, he had Tommy John surgery. This is not a pitcher, let's note. This is a infielder. But he had Tommy John surgery in high school. Then his elbow kept bothering him. And then he had a second elbow surgery to kind of fix things. And so we finally really got to see what he could do. He's a 2022 draftee. And we really got to see what he could do in 2024. And what he could do was get on base like almost no one else. He finished the season with a 57-game on-base streak, which I will tell you right now, because I've tried to look into this before, you will hear if he keeps it going, like, oh, he's breaking Mookie Betts' record or whatever. We have no – as someone who's dove into too much into minor league stats over the year, I promise you this, we have no possible way of knowing what is the on-base record. We know that Joe DiMaggio has the minor league hit streak record in addition to the major league hit streak record. On base percentage, they didn't keep that stat, you know, for the first 50 years of the minor leagues. Someone could have gotten on base every game for a season and probably no one would have noticed in 1920 in the 3i league or whatever. But we do know that Crisantes, you know, he is a .342 career minor league hitter right now. He gets on base at a very healthy clip and he plays in the infield. What did the Diamondbacks see from Crisantes last year, and what does that project going forward?
Yeah, I mean, they see a guy. I mean, I guess this, the thing you keep hearing is just he's hitterish. You know, he just finds the barrel. It's a short, controlled swing, lots of line drives all over the field. A guy that just every time he swings, he seems to make solid contact. Yeah, you mentioned the surgeries, and that kind of is probably the biggest like question mark going forward about him is what it's done to his arm and how that might limit him defensively. You know, I think they're hoping it gets to be a fringe average or average arm, and there's some hope that it will be. They played him a little bit at third base in hopes of almost like encouraging him to build up arm strength. So just needing him to make those throws. I think most people probably see him as a second baseman. But I do want to say, like, you know, the guy has been in rehab, you know, for such a long time. I think like the idea of giving him a little bit more time here to just sort of have a normal off season, sort of try to strengthen things in a more traditional way and see what it looks like, could change his profile a little bit. Maybe there's a little bit more arm strength, or maybe, you know, he comes back hitting the ball even harder. You know, that was the thing he was excited about when I talked to him last, I think it was probably last August. He was just saying like, you know, I'm going to be stronger when I come back next spring. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess like the name that always comes to mind when I hear him getting described is like a Wilmer Flores type, just a really solid hitter. Maybe you hope that there's a little bit more than that, you know, when you're talking about outcomes, but that's a nice big leaguer.
That's a nice really outcome. Good
career. Yeah, exactly. It does feel like, you know, you look at some of the contact, it doesn't like the quality of contact, I don't think blows you away, but I think he has a knack for hitting it at the right angles, you know, getting it in the air to his pull side just often enough. a guy that can, you know, maybe hit for a little bit more power than what you'd think, you know, just from, you know, the way guys like Isak Paredes and Alex Bregman seem to just kind of wear out left field. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being that kind of guy. So maybe he hits for a bit more power than you'd think.
Like you said, he's hitterish. Like, he is the kind of guy who, if you say he went 3-for-4 tonight, you say, how did he did? He's like, he did it three different ways. You know, he got three different hits. They're three very different hits. I do love also the point that you made, which is when we talk about his arm strength, he's had to focus on just being healthy enough to play, really going back to basically when he was 15, right? Like, he's had multiple surgeries here. This happens. Now, I would say that obviously, I would say in the long term, if a position player has multiple elbow surgeries, that is a more of a concern than the guy who's never had his elbow cut on as far as durability, throwing, all that. But at the same time, we 100% know that throwing can be improved. I always use this probably too much, but I remember George Lombard Sr. now. I have to say senior because his son is now a top Yankees prospect. But he was in that 1995 Macon Braves outfield that I could first team I got to cover basically as a quasi beat writer with Andrew Jones, which made poor George look like the worst center fielder I'd ever seen because he happened to be playing with the best center fielder I'll ever see defensively. But he had as he would describe himself, a below 20 arm at that point. He was a football player. He didn't know how to throw. By the time he finished his pro career, he was proud to say he had a 50 and an average arm. We know that arm strength can be built, but the key thing you have to have is you have to have a healthy arm to work on that. So it'll be really interesting to see Crisantes this year because, as you said, his profile really does tick up. If he just gets to a 50-55 arm, then we're talking about, okay, is he a third baseman? Is he a second baseman? Then this gets really interesting, and especially for a guy who, again, I think we feel very comfortable, is going to figure out ways to hit.
Right. And I do think we should mention that the bat probably is going to play just about no matter where you put him at this point, even if it's a left fielder, even if it's a first baseman. But the value that he can bring to an organization if he's playing second or third would change dramatically if he's able to do that.
I didn't even mean to create this segue, but I just mentioned that I was covering Andrew Jones in 1995. So we need to talk about, speaking of sons of 1995 Macon Braves that I covered, we have George Lombard Sr., who was one of the top prospects in the Yankees organizations, and we also have Drew Jones, who was one of the top prospects in the D-backs organization. We're going to cover that right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So, Nick, you and I have had multiple discussions about Drew Jones, unfortunately, the theme, as we've said, the theme of D-backs prospects is Drew Jones, who had a shoulder injury early in his pro career and basically then had a 23 season wrecked by a quad injury, a hamstring injury. So 2024, much like Crisantes, both of them are high school picks from 2022. And in both cases, 2024 was really the first year that they got to go out there and play every day. In Drew Jones' case, he played every day in the Cal League. And had a solid season. What did we get to see finally from him? Because again, first full healthy season, what were the things that really stand out, the positives that we saw from Drew Jones in 24?
Yeah. I mean, he stayed on the field. That was important. I think he battled through some adversity. You look at the way his season started. Man, we could do a whole podcast here on Drew Jones. I feel like there's so much to say about his, about where he is. I think he struck out in something like 25 of his first 50 plate appearances or at bats, and wound up finishing with a pretty good stat line. You know, showed an ability to control the strike zone. You know, hit for a little bit of average. Obviously I think he was, there are not a lot of questions about his ability out in center field. I think I actually hear a little bit more, you know, I'm a little surprised to say I've heard a little bit more of, like, you know, he wasn't the slam dunk 70 or 80 defender that I was expecting, but he's good out there. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we can, you know, confidently project, you know, 5 to 10 gold gloves in his future, but I think everybody thinks
he's not as
above average. Yeah. Everybody thinks he's going to at least be an above average to plus defender in center field. So there were some things to like about his season.
And then there is the question, which is the big one that you and I have talked about a lot, which is the thing I want to see. Like, I will just lay it out. I have tried to watch. I think I watched every ball that Drew Jones put in play last year. Thank you, Synergy Sports, for the ability to do this. And the thing that jumps out, the to-do list to me for Drew Jones, and I think he knows this to somewhat, and the Diamondbacks know this too. I'm not offering any secrets here. Right now, he really struggles, and you could almost say is almost incapable of pulling the ball in the air to his pull side. Like, you're going to be watching on the YouTube channel a spray chart of him right now. And if you just put this up like a Rorschach test and you said, is this a right-handed hitter or a left-handed hitter? You would say, oh, so it's a lefty pull hitter. It's like, no. This is a, you know, this is the opposite. This is a Miles Straw type spray chart where he's really good at going to the opposite field, but you got to be able to occasionally drop that bat head, you know, get in, you know. And if he doesn't at the higher levels, they're just going to eat him up inside. He's got to be able to put the fear in the pitcher of, like, hey, if you come in, I'm going to cause problems for you. So then you're going to have to go away. Drew Jones is great. If you're just away, he will wear out right field. With that, like, how much of a, you know, how confident are you, or how much do you think there is a chance that he will be able to kind of, you know, you wrote about he's kind of adjusted some things with toe tap and all, but, like, that's kind of a key for him, kind of what we want to see in 25 and beyond, right?
Yeah. I think you nailed it. I think that's important. It's an interesting thing that, you know, watching him, you don't even hear this talked about in pro ball, but he steps in the bucket, you know, and it's just a thing that you hear that talked about in little league or in, you know, high school baseball, which is to say, like, you know, if you're a right-handed hitter, instead of striding directly toward the pitcher, you stride open. You're kind of taking a step toward third base. Now that like is not a problem in and of itself necessarily, if you're able to do these things that you're talking about, like still pull the ball in the air to, you know, or just get the ball in the air, period. I think there's too many ground balls too in his profile. But given that he does do that and he struggles to do those other things, that is the first thing you probably want to attack and try to fix. I do think it's worth noting that if you go and you look at the first home run that he hit as a pro in 23, and you look at some of the ones that he hit, some of the swings that he took as the season went on in 2024, it is wildly different. It looks significantly better. Does it look as good as it needs to? Yeah, he has. I mean, that's as simple as, like, you know, simple as you can put it, right? I talked to area guys, not area guys, pro guys that had the Cal League last year, and they're like, yeah, we saw him early, we saw him late, and we all were like, wow, he has gotten a lot better. Let's give him some credit for this. You know, he still has a long way to go. So yeah, I mean, the fact is he has made some strides there. You know, talking to people out at D-backs camp, you know, they're encouraged by the work that they think he did in the off season and the progress that they think he made. I think there's always going to be a little bit of that striding open, at least in the lower half. They're more focused on making sure that it doesn't translate to the upper half. and that he can stay in there and drive balls the way that he needs to. You know, I think it's an interesting player. I think that the reason I am so willing to kind of keep him alive as a prospect high up on our list is because I think that the path toward getting a 5-win season for anybody on this list outside of Jordan Lawler is a lot narrower. I'm not saying I'm betting on Drew Jones figuring this out. I'm not saying I'm going to, you know, there's a 90% chance this happens, but the route for him to become a 5-win center fielder with terrific defense and even a, you know, you see it all the time. These guys that hit 240 and the fact that he doesn't chase much, could it be a low average from batting average perspective, a league average on base with some pop. He does have legitimate power. You see it in batting practice. He hasn't gotten to it yet, but you start putting those things together along with an above average defender in center field. You have a 5-win player right there pretty easily.
Kevin Pillar.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know the odds that it happens. But I do know that he has made significant progress thus far. He hasn't advanced as quickly as everyone thought. He also is sort of cursed, I feel like, with all these comparisons that are swirling around him. You know, not only his father, but Jackson Holliday, who's right there with him at the top of the draft, and who, you know, in the eyes of some people, like, Jackson Holliday surprisingly went one. You know, some people were so bullish on Drew Jones as the 1-1 in that draft. And then, you know, I think too, he's in this system where a lot of guys have moved really quickly over the last 5 years, whether it's Corbin Carroll or Alec Thomas or Jordan Lawler or whoever it might be. You know, these high school picks that just kind of rocket through the system, and here's Drew having to go one step at a time. So I think there's a lot on his plate. It seemed like he made a lot of progress last year, and I'm really excited to see what it looks like this year and whether he can keep it going. Because I mean, if it does come together, it's a really valuable player. Even if it doesn't come together at the levels that maybe we all thought back in July of 22.
That kind of is a perfect segue to Tommy Troy is 10 on this list, the 2023 first round pick. As you just laid out, the thing with Drew Jones that stands out is that the defense, the speed, all of that, that on-base ability, he has these kind of underlying floor tools that kind of give him this base to build off of. In Troy's case, Troy kind of had a really kind of struggled last year. I mean, let's just be honest, like it was not a year that he wanted to have. Struggled defensively as well, was moved from shortstop to where kind of it's like now, you know, okay, he's a second baseman. I feel like he has kind of a, in Drew Jones' case, there was a lot of improvement last year where you're like, okay, he's going to go to high A this year. You think, you hope he gets to double A by the end of the year. In Tommy Troy's case, I feel like 25 is a little bit more crucial. You're talking about a college guy versus a high school guy. You're talking about a guy who hasn't had the injuries who've slowed him down. We're talking about a Stanford product. This is not something where you're like, oh, I know he was a college guy, but he was playing at Middle Tennessee or whatever. Everything was here to say, okay, this should be a fast mover. And then, so what happened kind of in 24, and what does he need to do to kind of get back on track in 25?
Yeah, I guess there was a bit of an injury, not in the sense that it cost him a whole lot of games, but I think it was a hamstring or a quad?
Yeah.
Okay. At the end of camp, he really wanted to break camp and go to Hillsborough. And looking back on it, he admitted he shouldn't have, you know, he tried to grind through it. He wound up landing on the injured list. He came back, and it was more of a mental thing after that of like trying to make up for the lost time, trying to get his numbers where he thinks they should be. You know, I that happens, you know, guys have years like that. But you know, you kind of look at what you just said. I mean, we're looking at a guy who's a little limited defensively. You know, at least doesn't look like he's going to be an elite defender up the middle, and a guy who's older and really needs to get this moving. So yeah, I agree. This is a big year for him. Sounds like he's been hitting everything hard in the early live sessions, over at Salt River. So I don't know. I'm curious to see it. We haven't really seen very many flashes. It's hard to come across evaluators that are overly optimistic about it. I feel like it's funny because as divisive as Drew Jones is, I feel like I had an easier time coming across scouts that saw him that were like, I'm keeping him alive. I see things to be optimistic about here. Tommy Troy, it's been tougher to find those people that really believe in him, but he just hasn't, been the player that he was in college. I'm not saying he can't still, but it just hasn't shown up quite yet.
That's the key thing here is that that's where 25 is huge here, because if Tommy Troy goes back out in 25 and looks like he did in 22, 23, in college, 24 gets thrown basically on the, in the garbage can. It's like, okay, he had a hamstring injury, things spiraled, put that in the past. Tommy Troy comes out and does the same thing in 25 that he did in 24. At this time next year, he's going to be someone who he won't be done as a prospect, but he won't have a whole lot of value even in trade at that point, because it's like, okay, your record is your record, and 2 years of pro ball is enough time to say this is probably who you are. But that kind of is there's one other guy in the top 10 I did want to touch base on, because you got to see him in the big leagues last year, and a guy who kind of did, if we're talking about guys who kind of put things together, Adrian Del Castillo is a guy who I would say was coming out of high school, then at Miami was viewed as like a potential first round pick. And then it all kind of fell apart for him for a while, slid to the supplemental second round in the draft. And then last year was really kind of like, oh, there's that Adrian Del Castillo that we've been waiting to see. Where does he fit for this club in 25 and beyond? Because this guy who did reach the majors last year, there also have been questions about his defense, where he fits, defensively and all that. But kind of how you see as we're recording this, kind of the spring training's really going now, but we're just kind of getting into games. Where do you see Del Castillo fitting for this big league club?
Yeah, it was an interesting progression. He was a guy that I think BA had pretty high on its preseason list heading into his junior year, his draft year, as one of the maybe the best college bat in the class, one of the best. He still had some questions, I think, to answer about whether he could catch. But then when he started to struggle that draft year, and the fact that he wasn't exactly seen as a surefire big league catcher, things started to kind of plummet quickly. I think that was an example of a guy who is just putting a lot of pressure on himself and things spiraled. There's different versions of it. Some people think he was trying to manufacture and hit for a little bit more power, got himself into some bad habits and, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, the D-backs were happy to get him. It was funny because the first couple seasons, of his pro career, I kept hearing from hitting guys internally with the D-backs, like, I think there's more there. I think something's going to click here eventually. I think he had an injury or two that set him back a little bit, but it sure came together for him last year. And then it came together for him at the big league level. He was terrific in limited action, taking over when Gabby Moreno went down with a groin injury. Really saved their bacon in a couple of different instances, some clutch home runs, fantastic at the plate. Now, defensively was a different story. Had a lot of trouble throwing out base runners or stolen base attempts. He had trouble cutting those guys down. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head.
2 for 29.
Yes, it was bad. It's gonna probably never be a above average catch and throw guy. The arm strength just isn't there.
And the exchange is not great either, right?
That's like, what needs to change. Yeah. It's kind of syncing it all up, from, the footwork on up. I think that when you do get to the big league level and it gets exposed and, suddenly it's a thing that's like, more on your radar that you need to really lock in on, you can see guys fix that sort of thing. I'm really curious to see how it goes this year because it was kind of unplayable, especially with Torrey Lovello and how important defense and those, just an extra 90 feet here and there are in his mind. I've wanted to go back and look at each one of those stolen bases, because I do think there might have been another thing at play, in the sense that these guys had gotten spoiled having Gabby Moreno behind the plate and maybe stopped paying as much attention to things like
a little slower to the plate.
Exactly. Yeah. So I wonder just how much of it was on him. But look, I mean, the numbers are the numbers. You know, you can't have the opposing team stealing at that kind of success rate. I guess if you're going to OPS 1,000 or whatever he did, like maybe it is playable, but like that's not the type of baseball that Torrey Lovello likes to have. So it'll be a tough sell if it doesn't get better.
The other problem with that is that when that builds, then all of a sudden base stealers who weren't going to steal normally are all of a sudden go into a series going like, Del Castillo's behind the plate. Okay, we can run tonight. But the question with that then becomes, you mentioned it, like this is a team that kind of, like, obviously I would say that Adrian Del Castillo could fit as a DH at some days, you know, for them. Like the real question I would say probably more than anything is it plausible for him to be the backup catcher, or is it more plausible if this defense and the arm doesn't improve that he's that number three catcher who you've got to find, whether it's first base or the outfield or somewhere else that kind of is his primary home. And then you say, hey, by the way, having a guy who can still do this, that means that if we need to pinch run for our backup catcher or pinch hit for our backup catcher in the eighth, the ninth, the 10th inning, this still, you know, we, having a guy who can go back there is valuable. Is number three catcher kind of more like the likelihood, or is there a chance that, because it's just hard for me to find a whole lot of teams that go with the, this guy can really hit, but he can't play defense to a level we want him to play regularly as the backup.
Yeah. I don't know specifically the answer to that question as far as right now, like how willing the Diamondbacks would be to carry him as the backup, because it sort of feels like they are just, Jose Herrera is still on the 40 man. He's out of options, and he's a guy that is the classic backup catcher mold. So I think they're just, the sense that I'm getting is just that he's probably going to be on this team, and Del Castillo is going to get a chance to go down and try to get better at the catch and throw. But I mean, you know, I do think that it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that he does end up just having to be a DH at some point. If it doesn't get better. I'm with you though. I don't think that there's too many teams that are comfortable having a kind of light defender as your number two. It just doesn't seem like that's the direction that most clubs tend to go.
Most clubs seem willing to accept a $150 behind, you know, $150 with run into a home run every 5 week kind of guy. If he's really good defensively, is that number two. But that kind of also kind of takes us, we're talking a little bit about the big league club. Looking at the big picture kind of state of this organization right now, again, the positives are this is a team that has some young big league stars. You mentioned a Gabby Moreno. There's a Corbin Carroll. This is a team also that has been pretty aggressive. You know, there have been departures and there's guys coming in, but has been pretty aggressive about this is not a team that's looking at it and saying, oh, our goal is 20, 30 or anything like that. This is a team that's built to compete, to contend. The system, as you said, there aren't a whole lot of guys in this farm system right now, once you get past Lawler, who project as potentially above average regulars. Kind of as you kind of put the whole puzzle together, where do you see kind of this team right now? Like, what do they perceive? You know, like, again, you're a reporter, so I'll ask you kind of that way. Where do they perceive where they are now and kind of where they're going?
Yeah, I think they see themselves as being in a pretty good spot. You know, they have a fair amount of depth at the upper levels, even if they don't have a lot of guys that, you know, you look at as prospects, so to speak, that are you know, close to graduating and being impact guys. But when you look at a system or an organization that, you know, if everybody's healthy, could potentially have Brandon Pfaadt and Ryan Nelson pushed out of the starting rotation, that has Dre Jameson crazy, huh? Just getting healthy and coming back from Tommy John surgery and, you know, could be a either impact arm in the bullpen or, you know, give him another chance in the rotation eventually. You know, there's some depth there. You know, Pavin Smith, who we all kind of forgot about and kind of wrote off probably, emerged again last year and had some of the best data you'll see of anybody in AAA, mashed in the big leagues as well. And looks like he's ready to take over as a versus right DH and maybe can do more than that. He's generally put together pretty competitive at bats against lefties as well. I do think like you look at the system, like outside of Lawler, there's no guys. I mean, Crisantes could get there very quickly, right? But there's no guys you're kind of comfortable saying that that guy's definitely a big league regular. And is going to be doing it in the next 12 months. Right. But I think it's like a strangely deep system too. I didn't have much trouble finding 30 names. I think they've done a pretty good job in both the draft and international, just kind of finding interesting players. It's not like I was reaching for relievers to try to fill out the list. It's just a lot of guys that haven't done it yet, but have the kind of tools that you could see making it happen. Like Gino Groover is a guy that like I wouldn't be surprised if he pops. And they've got Christopher Torin, Yasiel Soler, like guys that are like, I don't think that they're blue chip prospects necessarily, but if they take a step forward in one area or another, suddenly are guys that you're like, oh yeah, Torin's definitely a shortstop. Like I can see that guy being an everyday big leaguer. You know, Groover irons out, you know, his defense. He's probably going to hit. It looks like, Soler just doing it at a higher level. There's a lot of guys that I feel like are pretty close to kind of establishing themselves. They just haven't done it yet at the highest levels.
The thing that stands out to me to kind of agree with you is when I look at this team right now, they have some resilience. I kind of been focusing maybe too much on this, but I've kind of looked at it. It's like one of the ways that teams fall apart in season is like everyone who's trying at all has a plan A, right? Where plan A, where you're saying all these players, if everyone's healthy, we should be okay. No one ever gets through a year, almost ever, where it's like everyone stayed healthy. But the thing with this is, yeah, they don't have a whole lot of stud prospects right now, but they also have Corbin Carroll and Marte and McCarthy and Pavin Smith, you mentioned, and Gabriel Moreno and Perdomo in the big leagues right now, who should be there for a while to come. You mentioned the rotation's got some depth to it. They're really kind of almost too many guys if everyone stays healthy. And then if you said, okay, what about if Perdomo goes down? Well, that's what we just talked about, Jordan Lawler. Well, what if Pavin Smith falls back apart this year? Well, that's what we just talked about, Adrian Del Castillo, who's been up and has performed as a hitter in the big leagues. Well, what happens if Josh Naylor gets injured? Well, Pavin Smith can play first base, and then you can plug in Del Castillo. What if Corbin Carroll has another injury? He's had injuries. Well, that's why they signed Grichuk, and they also still have Alex Thomas. There's a lot of different places where they have a plan B if something happens to their superior plan A, and not all teams can say that.
Yeah, and I mean to kind of jump off from what you were saying about their resiliency, like I guess I feel pretty good about them going into 2025. I think most people would say this is definitely a contender. I think if you would have asked me a couple of years ago if Alex Thomas was a you know, on the verge of maybe, you know, being a failed prospect, if Jordan Lawler hadn't yet played in the big leagues, if Drew Jones had massive questions surrounding him entering 2025, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know that I would have said like, oh yeah, going into 2025, I'm still going to feel really good about the Diamondbacks. But like you said, I mean, Jake McCarthy has emerged as a, you know, solid regular probably. I think they've done a good job too, of, you know, using what resources they have to plug other areas on the roster. De Los Santos and Pintar for AJ Puck, using the outfield depth in Varsho to go get Gabriel Moreno. Those are some examples, I guess, of international and draft successes that lead to, you know, plugging holes in the big league roster. Jazz Jr. for Gallen several years ago was a savvy international sign that they wound up flipping for a front of the rotation starter. You know, and then they've gone out and spent money in ways. Yeah, Corbin Burns, first of all. Eduardo Rodriguez and Jordan Montgomery didn't work out the way they would have liked last year, but they have spent that money. You know, Jock Peterson, they went and signed, you know, turned out to be a wise signing. Grichuk as well, who you mentioned. They were willing to take on some money to plug a hole with Suarez, and that's turned out great. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like they've kind of been able to, and I guess you can even go back to, like, you know, the success on the pro guys internationally in identifying Merrill Kelly, you know, 6-7 years ago. They've hit on a lot of things in a lot of different ways. This roster's, you know, it's not just straight out of the draft, straight international, straight free agency or trades. It's a combination of everything. And I guess they've kind of minimized some of those big, like, you know, face plant mistakes. You know, I feel like they've done a pretty good job identifying what they have. And I mean, what stands out as a player you'd really want back that they've traded away? I guess probably at the beginning of the Hazen tenure, they included Mitch Haniger in that deal, but they got Ketel Marte and Taiwan Walker back. Like, you know, they let Brad Keller go in the,
if that's your biggest regret, you're okay.
Rule five. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't feel like they've had all that many of those kinds of mistakes where you're, you know, they traded Johan Duran to get Eduardo Escobar, but Escobar was a nice player for them. I don't feel like they've really squandered too much of the talent that they've brought up. They've done a pretty good job at that.
If you're the Dodgers have done many things right. They also traded Jordan Alvarez for 3 months of Josh Fields. Like, if you, again, the Diamondbacks, if you're like, oh, we shouldn't have traded Haniger. Yeah, they probably shouldn't have. But like, that's not the thing that stands out. Like, if I was looking at what listening to this as a D-backs fan, the thing that stands out to me looking at it from afar is this is the team that has a competitive lineup and rotation. Now we'll see how it plays out, but there are so many teams that have been unwilling to kind of, like, again, the Burns signing to me stands out from the standpoint of, like, there are a lot of teams that are like, we're going to be diligent. We're going to be, you know, we're not going to overstretch or anything like that. And so you look at it and they go into the season. It's like, this is a hole. I don't know why they haven't solved this hole, but this is a hole. The Diamondbacks go into the season and it's like, okay, it's very possible that this team could be filled with good players, not great ones, and it gets them to 85, 86, 87 wins, and you want to be at 92. That's kind of depending. That's what all within the range of variance for this team with health, with performance, all that. But the thing that I'll give them credit for is it's not a team that you look at and say, oh, I could see how this team could very easily be at 75 wins this year, because a lot of things would have to go wrong for this team for it not to be a competitive team that has a shot at the playoffs. And we saw in 2023, get into the playoffs, get hot at the right time, you can have a pretty magical October. Before we let you run, Nick, I did want to ask you, like, we like finishing every one of these with this, like, who are some guys outside of the top 10? You mentioned, you know, like, again, the depth of the system's not bad. Who are a couple of guys who team fans should keep an eye on who could really pop going forward?
Well, I was thinking about this question. I think if you were just asking me, it would be one answer, but like just from my reporting in the fall on this list. But I will say I should add a few names that have stood out to people early in camp so far. Christian Mana is throwing a little bit harder. I think he sat 93-ish last year. They're saying he's been sitting around 95 in his lives so far. You know, whether that stands over a full season, you know, when you're pitching six innings, we'll see. Christopher Turin has come in excellent shape and seems very motivated. And I've heard good things about Yasiel Soler as well. So those are guys that probably are more like the live looks on the ground of like who's looking good. The guy that probably that first jumped to my mind when I was thinking about who outside the top 10 is most interesting to me is Daniel Egan. A right-hander they drafted last year. A guy who, when I was breaking down just sort of his repertoire and like what he is, it felt pretty clearly like this was a guy that maybe, you know, has an argument to be the best pitching prospect in the system. And I was tempted at various points during the reporting of the top 30 to really run him up there. I decided to be a little bit more conservative because he hasn't pitched yet in pro ball, but is a guy with a lively fastball, a guy with a legit breaking ball, and a guy who has added, I think it was a split change that they worked to incorporate with him last year after signing when they had him at the in the pitching lab at Salt River. So guys are really excited about him. People that saw him with other clubs, amateur scouts that saw him really liked him. And then all the feedback that I've heard since he signed and the work that he's made to refine that third pitch, the change up or split, whatever it is, split change, has me pretty optimistic about what he could do this year.
Those are some great names. And I can't imagine if you're listening to this that you don't know that you should be, checking out all of Nick's stuff at azcentral.com, because there's a lot of, Nick is the source I always go to if I need to know what's going on with the Diamondbacks, because he's been doing this and doing a great job of it for years. Check him out there. Do check out baseballamerica.com. If you enjoyed this, we have Nick's 30 scouting reports on the top 30 prospects in the D-back system, full scouting reports, BA grades, tools grades. And by the way, we tossed in another 10 D-backs prospects beyond the top 30 to know. Also all kind of other stuff, like we have our Robo Scout top 100 fantasy prospects. If you want to look at a very analytically driven ranking of how, we like to do that in addition to the top 100 prospects. We also have the Dynasty 500 rankings out there for fantasy players, college top 25, college coverage all week, every week, as we're now in the college season, draft top 200 for the 2025. And by the way, we're updating our 2026 list as well. So much over at baseballamerica.com. We hope you join us there. If you're listening to this, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast provider. It helps other people find it. And also, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. We love how many people are getting this on YouTube now. Please subscribe. That way you'll know, and click that bell so you know anytime we've got a new one. We got a new one of these deep dives coming out every weekday until we're up to all 30 teams. We're getting there, but we're not there yet. We won't get there even by the end of this week when you're watching this, but we'll be not far away. Really just right around the start of March. And by the way, we're also rolling out the updates on our little breakdowns on our number one prospect in all 30 organizations as well. So there's a ton of content on the Baseball America YouTube channel. For Nick, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.